Cunningham.
Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by Ecolab, dedicated to improving cleaning and sanitation standards for leading hospitality, healthcare, and food processing customers worldwide. On the web at ecolab.com.
It's 6 minutes now past 11. And good morning. Welcome to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Ankton. Glad you could join us. Abortion politics is once again front and center at the Minnesota legislature. A measure that would require women to wait 24 hours before receiving an abortion has been added to a Health and Human Services bill that would fund a wide range of social service programs in Minnesota, nursing homes, welfare programs, and the like. That bill covers services for more than 600,000 Minnesotans, but the fate of the bill and those services is in doubt this morning. The bill itself has passed both houses of the legislature, but Governor Jesse Ventura says he will veto it because the abortion language is contained in that bill. Presumably, the bill could be reworked at this point without the abortion language, but so far, House Speaker Steve Swigum has not sent the bill to the governor for his action. And the clock is ticking. The state constitution says the legislature must adjourn by next Monday, and if no bill is passed by Monday, the governor would then have two choices, either call a special session to pass a Health and Human Services bill or cut off all those services for all those Minnesotans come July 1st. Today on Midday, we're going to focus on this latest abortion-related dispute at the state capitol. We'll be talking with some of the key players in this debate and also opening the phone lines for your comments. But first, with some background on how we got to this point, here is Minnesota Public Radio's Laura McCollum.
The political games began last Friday when Senate DFL leaders took the highly unusual step of ratifying a House Health and Human Services bill that didn't match up with the Senate version on key issues. The plan was to avoid a conference committee, get the bill to Governor Ventura quickly, and give lawmakers time to salvage the bill once he vetoes it. Ventura has promised to veto the $6.3 billion bill funding nursing homes, welfare, services for the disabled, and other programs because it contains a 24-hour abortion waiting period. Following the Senate's unusual maneuver, House Republican leaders responded with a move of their own. Speaker Steve Swigum of Kenyon says he's taking his time reading the nearly 700-page bill before signing it and sending it to the governor.
Do I read all engrossed bills? No, I do not. I do not read all engrossed bills. But this one, because of the unique special action of the Senate usually doesn't just go ahead and accept the House language either, does it? So that's a pretty unique action. Because of that unique action, I thought it would be pretty important to go through the bill and make sure there's not something in there that I didn't see in there.
Holding a dog-eared copy of the bill, Swigum says he's about halfway through reading it. He says it could take anywhere from an hour and a half to a week and a half. House Democrats held a news conference outside the governor's office to call on Swigum to sign the bill and urge Ventura to veto it. Minneapolis DFLer Jim Davney says abortion opponents are playing games with an important bill.
I regret this unprecedented abuse of the legislative process to push forward an extremist agenda at the expense of thousands of Minnesotans who rely on the funding in this bill.
DFLers say time is running out for an agreement on the sweeping spending bill. Swigum says he's simply using the same tactic Senate DFL leaders have used for years, running out the clock to their advantage. He says the longer he stalls, the more the pressure builds for Ventura to sign the bill.
It would give the governor more chance to look at it. It would give the governor an opportunity to say, you know, I want to fund nursing homes, I want to fund development of disabled care centers, I want to do that, I don't want to veto that.
Swigum says the waiting period, which requires women to review certain information 24 hours before having an abortion, is a reasonable provision that a majority of House and Senate members support. Supporters of legalized abortion say it inserts government between a woman and her doctor. DFL Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe of Erskine says it doesn't belong in a major spending bill, and Swigum's maneuver could shut down on July 1st, state agencies that provide health and human services.
I think that's unconscionable that one person would be willing to risk all of that and the very meaningful changes and appropriations that are in those bills, all because of abortion language that is controversial and could very well be dealt with separately.
Swigum points out that the Senate used a similar tactic 4 years ago and sat on a bill raising the speed limit for 26 days. With only a week left before the legislature must adjourn, The standoff increases the prospects that a special session may become necessary. At the Capitol, I'm Laura McCullum, Minnesota Public Radio.
Now, there was yet another development in this story last night. The Minnesota House attached the entire Health and Human Services spending bill to a minor health department bill. House leaders say this maneuver was necessary to get the bill to a conference committee with the Senate so that differences over other issues, things like nursing home reform and welfare time limits, can be worked out. Well, joining us now from the state capitol with the latest is Minnesota House Speaker Steve Swigum. Morning, Mr. Speaker.
Good morning, Gary. How are you?
Just fine. Have you finished reading the bill yet? Any late update there?
Well, in between negotiations with the senator and the governor's office and the House floor activities, I haven't had a great deal of time, but I'm making progress, Gary.
So still no word on when you might send the bill over to the governor?
No, I expect that I'll be able to sign it fairly shortly, though, Gary. I would expect that. Understand what we're really trying to do is make sure that the process take place as it normally would, and that be that there be a conference committee to work out differences between the House and the Senate.
It's difficult for people to understand who aren't privy to the ins and outs of the legislative process. What's going on here?
Well,
bottom line.
I think that the bottom line is that there are some extremists in the state, and I had a kind of smile when one of the former representatives was on here maybe a minute and a half ago. Dabney is his name, from Minneapolis, talking about the extreme agenda. The extreme agenda is those that are on the left on this issue. That is the extreme agenda. This is a really, really good health and human service bill that funds nursing homes extremely well in the state of Minnesota, provides for long-term care reform that the Senate does not do, provides for the care for a developmentally disabled persons, for the medical assistance individuals in the state. This is a really, really good bill. Included in that, of course, is this, I would term, a very moderate provision on the women's right to know. Gary, the extreme position is that of Representative Dabney and his supporters. This women's right to know passed the Minnesota Senate, the Democratic-run Minnesota Senate, by a very wide margin. It passed the Minnesota House, the Republican House, by a very wide margin. And in a recent Minnesota poll, Gary, 2-1, a ratio of 2-1, citizens of the state of Minnesota support the idea of the women's right to know. This was a poll done 2 weeks ago, 2-1. So, you know, when you have a majority of the citizens of the state, a majority of the House, a majority of the Senate, and you have a very, very radical minority, Representative Dabney and others, they are the extremists in this position. And they're the ones that are holding at jeopardy the nursing home funding, the care for the developmentally disabled, and so on.
The governor, long ago, made it clear he was going to veto any kind of legislation like this. Given the broad support at the legislature and apparently among the general public for this 24-hour waiting period, why not deal with this in separate legislation so that services for the poor aren't endangered in any way?
Well, first of all, Gary, this is appropriately in the omnibus health and human service bill because the information and facts that come along with the information of the right to know, it costs about $300,000 for the preparation of the brochures, for the preparation of the facts. So this is a spending item. It's appropriately in the Health and Human Service bill as a spending item, just like medical assistance is a spending item, or just like welfare reform costs money and is a spending item. This is the appropriate place for it, is in this bill. Now, if you remember a year ago at this time, about almost at this time, you know, the governor also mentioned that a year ago, or certainly indicated, some would say made a promise, that he would sign the bill, only to turn around, you know, a week later and veto it after getting a few calls from Washington, D.C. and Hollywood. He did change his mind at that time. You know, there's no saying he wouldn't change his mind again now. I think we need to put the bill before him and let him make a choice.
Given the governor, do you think by applying this additional pressure, he's going to be more likely to sign the bill?
Oh, you know, Gary, I don't know. You know, the governor's gone both ways. He said one thing, done another thing in the past. I'm not sure that the governor is one that necessarily reacts to pressure, so to speak. I think he probably is not. I think he probably would veto the bill. I would face that up front that he probably would. You know, I do think, though, that that's an action that he would take, and then he would have to be subject to the consequence of that action. The consequence meaning all nursing homes playing hostage with all nursing homes and care for developmentally disabled in the state of Minnesota. You know, that's his action. That's what he is doing. All I'm doing is kind of providing that education, the opportunity for a majority of the House, a majority of the Senate, and a great majority on a 2-to-1 basis of the citizens of the state to have their voice heard. My rhetoric question would be, why would you let minorities on this extreme issue, why would you let the extreme minorities rule the day?
Why do you personally believe, Mr. Speaker, that this provision is so important as to risk the possibility of a special session or a government shutdown?
Gary,
in all honesty,
I know that you asked the question to me. I think you should ask that question to Roger Moe or to Governor Ventura or to Representative Dabney, who was on 5 minutes ago. I think that's an appropriate question to them, is why the importance of such a moderate provision that can bridge those extremes, the extreme left and right in the abortion area. And I know that that's hard to bridge, but boy, if this bill doesn't do it, I don't know what does. You know, this is a bill that has been very, very well worked out with the governor's office last year. I guess the question should be termed to them is why they would risk the funding for these important programs at the expense of this very well moderate, balanced, and supported by a great majority of the citizens of the state provision. I don't know why they would risk it.
Right. I hope to put the question to those folks, but from your perspective, why do you think this is so important?
To me, I'm not sure that the majority of the citizens should bow to a threat of the governor. I'm not sure that that's the appropriate mechanism to be done. Now, we do have other options and alternatives that we're looking at for sure. Gary, but you know, the fact is that, you know, we're acting, I think, upon a majority of the citizens, a majority of the members of the legislature, and isn't that not what we're supposed to do?
Do you think this, now you added last night the Health and Human Services bill to another bill.
Right.
Do you think that that's going to be a good way to at least get the other issues resolved with the Senate over, you know, how nursing home regulations and the rest?
Right. I think there's another opportune way. It's an opportunity to do so. Now, when we talk about nursing homes, Gary, I want you to know that the nursing homes of the state, caregivers, the staffs and the nursing homes have a much, much better position in the House than they do in the Senate. Our House bill is extremely, extremely supportive of nursing home caregivers and the reform of long-term care. So understand, the House bill is the bill that they want. So the bill that would be put before the governor, they would not want to see veto, because that's the bill that they want. We do have time to put bills together, but I think that's what you have conference committees for. That's where you try to work out differences. And the bill that we passed last night gives the Senate another opportunity to bring this up and vote on the Senate floor to go to conference committee. And you remember last Friday when they did bring forward the motion on the Health and Human Service bill at that time, a lot of people were really caught by surprise when all of a sudden Senator Berglund moved to concur with the House to just take the House position, although I certainly take that as a compliment that they wanted to take the House position in total. I think that was caught a number of senators by great surprise, and the move last night provided the opportunity for them not to be caught by surprise this time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Appreciate
Gary,
it.
Thank you so much. Call anytime.
Minnesota House Speaker Steve Swigum joining us from the state capitol. We're talking this hour about the 24-hour waiting period that is part of the Health and Human Services bill. It would require women to wait 24 hours before they receive an abortion. And it has led to a pretty significant stalemate at the state capitol. What with less than a week to go now before the legislature is scheduled to adjourn, services for some 600,000 Minnesotans could be at stake unless the stalemate is resolved. Joining us now is John Woodley, who is Governor Ventura's spokesman. Morning, John.
Hi, Gary. How are you today?
Understand the governor has a press conference scheduled at 1 o'clock this afternoon. Has he had a change of heart on this? Has he decided that, I'm gonna sign the bill because we really need those services?
I doubt very much that that's going to happen. In fact, I was just listening to the speaker on your show, and I had to kind of laugh when he would say, I'm pretty sure the governor would veto this. You know, yeah, he probably would. The fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, he will veto it. There's no pretty sure, probably about it. And I think that he's fooling himself and his caucus if he thinks he can move this in a different direction.
What is so bad about those abortion provisions that he would risk the need for a special session or even a government shutdown?
The governor has made it very clear that, I think, notwithstanding this issue, considering all issues, that he does not like legislative game playing. He has said in the past that important issues like abortion law and conceal and carry, those kinds of issues should be considered as standalone issues. They should not be riders to other bills, especially appropriation bills, that would put them at risk. The legislative process is the House passes a bill, the Senate passes a bill, the conferees make it agree on similar language, and then it is forward to the governor. The governor can sign the bill and put it into law or veto it. And then the legislature has an opportunity, if there is a veto, to override it. That process took place last year on the 24-hour notice bill, and it can take place again this year, and that's exactly what the speaker ought to do.
Mm-hmm. This bill is different than last year's version. Does that imply, Mr. Woodley, that if the legislature were to pass a standalone bill, that the governor might actually sign it?
No. The governor would veto a 24-hour waiting period. And, I mean, that is the problem. They just can't handle the fact that the governor went through a process last year where he very seriously considered this bill. He decided in his own mind, in his own heart, that this is a issue that the government should not have an involvement in. His statement was that this is an issue that is between a mother, her spouse, her clergy, and her doctor, and the government should not be involved in it.
Mm-hmm. But how can, from the governor's perspective, how can asking a woman to wait for 24 hours before making this significant decision and giving her some more information about it, how can that be a bad thing?
Governor's, I mean, his whole philosophy of life is based on fairness. And fundamentally, he will tell you that this is not fair. Why should women have to have notice before they, or when they go to a doctor for a medical procedure? Why wouldn't men have that? Why wouldn't other procedures that are very serious procedures and risky procedures, why wouldn't they require it for those procedures? Why wouldn't that be required in law? The fact of the matter is many hospitals and clinics have those policies and do, and obviously the reality is that this is discussed long before any procedure takes place. But the fact that you would put it in law goes against the governor's principles.
Polls indicate that 61% of Minnesotans favor a 24-hour wait. A majority of legislators favor a 24-hour wait. Given those realities, and given the controversial nature of abortion and the difficulty in finding any kind of middle ground, shouldn't that what appears to be majority support be factored into the governor's thinking on this?
Governor does not govern by polls. Polls can be very, very unreliable, as you know, engaging people's support for a specific issue, depending upon how it's asked, in what form it is asked. I think the important thing here is that the speaker continues to say that the governor and the majority leader are on the fringe here, and that he's doing this he's doing it on behalf of the people, that 61% of the people that want this done. I think that if the people were to understand the tactics that the speaker is using, that he is putting at risk the most vulnerable people in this state, shutting down government, if they understand that it is the speaker who is putting these people at risk, they wouldn't want it under those circumstances.
setting aside the issue of who might be responsible, should those vulnerable people who depend on these services now begin to prepare for the loss of those services come July 1?
There's no question about it. The Speaker is putting us in a position where we'll have to prepare. We don't like that. We think it's irresponsible, but if that's the road that the Speaker intends to go down, we have to take that seriously, and we will.
Okay, thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Governor Ventura's spokesman, John Woodley, joining us from the state capitol. And also on the line now from the capitol is Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe. Morning, Senator.
Good morning, Gary.
Senator, why do you think this issue is so important as to risk a special session or even a possible shutdown of government services?
Well, I think that it's unfortunate that we find ourselves in this situation. I think it's clear that this issue is very controversial, and it ought not to be tied to a major appropriation bills that funds three large state agencies, human services, health, and corrections, and it ought to be processed independent of that bill. And I'm just frustrated myself, like I think everybody else is, when it comes to this issue, because it ought to be moving independent, and we ought to be able to move these budget bills, get them processed so that we can negotiate out our differences.
But given whether that should be the case or not, it isn't at this point. And given that reality, again, why do you think this is such an important provision that it's worth going to the mat for?
Well, again, I as you know, I don't support it. My views are consistent with the governor, and I think Mr. Woodley accurately articulated the governor's views. And as I said, I firmly believe that there are some areas where government is not better equipped to make a decision than the individual. And so that's the reason I don't think it ought to be in these bills. If folks need a vote to make sure that the various interest groups know where you stand on that issue one way or the other, that's fine. We can move a separate bill and let people do that. But to put in jeopardy a COLA for wages for health care workers, to put in jeopardy an effort to try to get insurance to uninsured kids, to put in jeopardy mental health reforms that are very, very much needed in the state with increased outpatient treatment and crisis intervention. We've got provisions in the bill for scholarship and tuition for health care workers to address the shortages we have there. The MFIP reforms to help families who are honestly and legitimately working towards getting off of welfare, the reimbursement formula for providers, putting all of that in jeopardy over this provision, I just think is irresponsible.
The House has attached the Health and Human Services bill now to another bill, and Speaker Swigum said he was hoping that a conference committee could be formed with the Senate now to work out the other differences in that Health and Human Services provision or in that bill. Is that likely to happen? Are you going to go to conference and try to at least get the other things resolved?
Well, I hope so. That certainly would be my desire, and we will be we're in session now, and we'll be making some decisions on that. As you know, they amended their bill onto another bill and sent it over. We more than likely will table that and then take some other action ourselves so that we can get the Senate version of the bill passed again. But keep in mind, I just don't understand where the Speaker feels he has this kind of single-handed authority. You know, keep in mind, this is the person that has singularly denied the legislature from electing regents by refusing to call a joint convention. He has now refused to send a bill, a very routine procedure when bills pass and they're on their way to the governor. The Speaker and the President sign those reports from the revisor's office. He has refused to sign that. And now, most recently, they passed their tax bill late last week, and the House has yet to send the message over to the Senate so that we can appoint the conference committee. So it's fairly clear that their dilatory actions are either designed to shut down the government or to put all of this into a special session or something, because it certainly is not the usual way of operating here in the final days of the session.
For those who don't follow the ins and outs of the legislature very closely and are concerned really only about how things turn out, if somebody is watching this, especially somebody who's actually dependent on all the services provided or that would be provided in the Health and Human Services bill, put the same question to you that I put to Mr. Woodley, should they begin preparing now for the loss of those services?
Well, certainly that's a worst-case scenario. But if we do not get this bill passed, yes, come July 1st, there's going to be serious problems. The healthcare providers that provide the services to folks in need, primarily the poor and disabled and the elderly, they will not get the reimbursement formulas. We'll not have, I don't know what's going to happen with the correction systems, because they're in that bill as well. So it is serious. I just wish that the governor or that the speaker would have exercised his proper signature on the report last week. That message could have gotten to the governor. He more than likely would have vetoed it by now, because he said he's going to veto it. Then we can go back and start to negotiate and work out a second bill. But he has deliberately held that up, and I think that's unfortunate. So, yes, I think the speaker, on behalf of the Republicans in the House, is seriously putting in jeopardy all of the services and necessary government delivery systems that are encompassed in the Corrections Department and Health Department and Human Service Department.
And might it be fair for, again, for people outside the Capitol who aren't involved in the abortion debate to say that both sides here are jeopardizing those services, not just the speaker, but you in the Senate, the governor's office, everybody's endangering these services?
Well, again, one person is denying the bill to go to the governor so that he can exercise his judgment on it. Once he does that, then we can move on with the second plan. I mean, I think it's fairly clear we will try to figure out other avenues to try to get this resolved. But I think after you cut through all of that, Gary, you really get back to this. There are fundamental differences between the House and the Senate as it relates to the Health and Human Services and Corrections Budget Bill. Let's debate those. Let's not get that bogged down in this debate over these provisions on abortion. That's a separate issue. Let's debate that someplace else. We have honest differences. The House reduces chemical dependency funding. They reduced the maintenance of effort for TANF, a whole host of things that are legitimate budget issues to debate. Let's debate those. Let's resolve our differences on that so that we can keep these services going to Minnesotans. We can have the debate on the 24-hour waiting period someplace else.
Thank you, Senator. Appreciate you joining us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe joining us as we talk about the 24-hour abortion waiting period, the provision which is led to a big stalemate over the Health and Human Services bill at the state capitol, and the clock is ticking. Well, for the rest of this hour, we'd like to open the phone lines for your comments on this stalemate at the Capitol. Give us a call here, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. We'll get to some of your comments in a couple of minutes. Right now, some news headlines from Greta Cunningham. Greta?
Thanks, Gary. Good morning. Senior Senate Democrats say the proposed federal tax cut bill is too expensive and unfairly tilted toward the wealthy. The Senate Finance Committee opened debate today on the proposed 11-year, $1.35 trillion proposal. Republicans say the refund simply returns the huge anticipated government surpluses to taxpayers, and they say the wealthy get most of the benefits because they pay most of the taxes. Finance Committee members have proposed 171 amendments to the tax cut bill. Light trading on Wall Street today as investors await a decision on interest rates from the Federal Reserve. They're hoping for a fifth interest rate cut this year to boost the sluggish economy. The market isn't making any significant moves before an expected afternoon announcement. More documents in the Oklahoma City bombing case have turned up. A source says the FBI's Baltimore office found seven more documents late last week that should have been forwarded. Meantime, there's word the FBI field offices got conflicting signals about what evidence to keep. In regional news, Bloomington police say three people are in custody in the case of a couple found dead in their home. A police sergeant says 39-year-old son of the couple is one of the people being held. The victims, both 68 years old, were found about 6:30 last night after a relative went to check on the two and saw the bodies through a window. A station wagon missing from the couple's home was later found parked outside the Minneapolis residence where the three were apprehended. The Hennepin County Medical Examiner's Office did not immediately disclose a cause of death. Names of the victims have not been immediately released. The forecast for Minnesota calls for the possibility of some scattered thunderstorms statewide this afternoon. Highs ranging from 75 in the north to 95 in extreme southern Minnesota. At this hour, Duluth reports cloudy skies and 60 degrees. It's sunny in Mankato and 84. Sunshine in Rochester and 81. And in the Twin Cities, sunny skies with a temperature of 82 degrees. That's a check on the latest news.
Thanks, Greta. 23 minutes before noon. Reminder that the programming you're enjoying today is a gift in part from the members of NPR's Leadership Circle. We thank you. Well, we'd like to get some comments now from those of you who are listening this hour about the debate at the Capitol, the stalemate at the Capitol. Specifically, do you support the provision for a 24-hour waiting period before a woman has an abortion? And in your mind, is this so important one way or the other that it's worth risking a special session or the possible loss of social services that would be contained in the Health and Human Services bill come July 1st? Again, the number to call, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. If you're near a computer, another alternative is to log on to our website, minnesotapublicradio.org, click on News, and enter your thoughts on our soapbox as we gather opinion on this very controversial and important issue. Beth, you're first. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Gary. Thank you very much for taking my call. Can you hear me okay?
You're coming through fine.
Okay. I am just absolutely outraged by this whole episode. I'm extremely disappointed that the Democrats even passed it through the House, and I'm extremely angry at the Republican Party and Mr. Swigum for this stunt. Although I am pro-choice, I think this type of politics is absolutely, they're playing with people's lives, and I think they should just be ashamed of themselves for this. And I hope Jesse Ventura sticks to his guns and follows through with his convictions and stands by his beliefs, because obviously we can't trust either the other parties to do so. And I just, if I was a pro-choice person right now, I would be so embarrassed to be part of this shenanigan. It's just an absolute mockery of people having a say in what's going on. If Mr. Swigum feels that this would pass two-thirds of the majority of the House, he should let Jesse Ventura veto it, and he should then go ahead and get the two-third majority to override the veto. I am just furious that they play these kinds of games, and I think this is exactly why we voted for someone like that, Jesse Ventura, and why I would vote for him again. And more power to Mr. Ventura for being forthright and honest, because obviously no one else at our legislature is. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Beth. Let's move on to Bob, who's on the line from Minneapolis. Bob, go ahead, please.
Good morning. A little less worked up about the whole issue, but I just have a question concerning the timing of the veto.
Okay, well, I'm not an expert.
Question
but
is the,
go ahead.
Is it possible that this could essentially be a pocket veto in which the governor could just sit on it and not give the legislature an opportunity to override it? And as far as putting it on this bill, I wonder why he didn't put it on a garbage bill, a different garbage bill. If the House, Mr. Swigum, had put it on a garbage bill that had included the salary for little Jimmy Janosch, there is no question that it would not have been vetoed. Just a comment. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, we should note that Speaker Swigum mentioned earlier in the program that this is a perfectly appropriate, in his mind, perfectly appropriate vehicle for this abortion provision, since it does include money, spending money, or money that the health department would need to spend to provide materials for women about the abortion procedure. Carolyn, you're next. Go ahead, please.
Oh, thank you very much. You know, I just listened to the first woman, and I thought, well, she's saying a lot that I'm saying. I'm very upset that this is a political maneuver. It is not something I believe that a government should be involved in. I am a mother of daughters. I'm a senior citizen. I was a teacher. And I have never, since abortion has become legal, known of a woman who took an abortion lightly, who had suddenly put it on her list of things to do that day. And the idea that...
But given that, given your belief about that, how can this bill do any damage then?
Because it interferes with what, I mean, there are very few centers for abortion left in this state. Why? We know. All right. If you're coming from a distance, what does this mean for you? What does it mean if you're living in conditions that are awkward? And you have to be contacted, or you have to visit somebody, or you have to get stuff in the mail. It's simply not something that anybody has a right to interfere with. And I'm sorry, Gary, but I always get very hot on the collar when I listen to men talk about this because, you know, they don't do it. They don't have to face that problem. So, anyway, I guess that's where I am. Secondly, when they do talk about, you were saying that there is a majority of people who were supporting this waiting period, I don't think a lot of people even think about it. I think they'll say, you think that's okay? No, yeah, sure, that's okay, because I don't think they really think what it means. It doesn't sound bad, but I don't really think that it's something that's on the front burner of, you know, their mind at the time.
Okay.
And I do feel very upset that this is becoming such a political football.
All right. Thanks, Carolyn.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Let's move along here to Joey, who is our next guest. Go ahead, Joey. Your thoughts on this provision?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I feel that the people who veto or block the bill are not as much responsible for if the bill doesn't pass and the you know, all the monies for the health and human service people get benched or whatever it is. I feel that the people who added the amendment on are more responsible for the screw-up, and don't dump it on the other people. You don't put apples with oranges.
Mm-hmm.
And Speaker, I don't think that they should.
Right. Speaker Swiggum says, though, that this is a perfectly appropriate vehicle for this provision, and that it's not just tacking something on, that it really is an integral part, in his mind, integral part of that Health and Human Services bill, and should be in there.
See, I don't agree. I mean, paying for services is one thing. Deciding whether someone can have a procedure is something else. That there are two different things, and they shouldn't be attached onto each other. And I just really don't feel that it's appropriate. Another personal comment is, why do you make a law for something that already exists?
What do you mean?
Well, if I went to get an abortion today, they're not going to say, you have to have it today, or we're not going to give you an abortion. So I can go home and think about it. Give me the information. I will think about it. I probably already thought about it. But it's already available. When you go to the doctor to get your appendix out, unless it's a medical emergency, they're not going to say you have to have it today.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you.
It's already in place.
Let me ask you this then, Joey. Given the fact that you see, you know, that there's really no need for this, and given the politics of it, of this issue, why not just pass the provisions and be done with it? Because it wouldn't substantially change anything that's going on now. It would satisfy what some people see as a need to provide more information for women and so on and so forth. But in your mind, wouldn't change anything anyway. So why not just go ahead and pass it? Be done with it.
I guess because in my mind, if there wasn't an ulterior motive behind it, something that I'm not a big politician and I'm not a legal expert, so I don't see what it would help. But in my mind, they wouldn't be pushing this unless there's an ulterior motive to something else.
Okay.
And though I think it doesn't make any sense to me, but the people who are saying, well, it's one step toward making abortions illegal, maybe so. Maybe they think that if we can get this passed, we can go another step, we can go another step, we can go another step. If it doesn't need to be a law, why make it? You know, people complain because the government interfere into our business more than they should anyway. So why make another law?
All right. Thanks, Joy.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Let's move on to Monica, who's on the line from Minneapolis. Good morning, Monica.
Morning, and thanks so much for taking my call.
You bet.
I'm going to repeat a lot of what other people have said. I want to thank God that I voted for Jesse and that he's there to protect a women's rights. You've asked a lot of the callers why it's a make or break situation, and I guess I really feel strongly in how much this bill will actually cost us. There will need to be auditors to make sure the doctors are indeed in compliance, which will be very expensive. There will be a huge debate over what the materials will say in terms of the education. I'm sure that some people will want them to reveal that it's actually more unsafe to go through with the baby to term, and it will explode into more and more costs. So that's my comment, and thank you for Jesse Ventura.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right. Thank you, Monica. By the way, there is wording in the bill, and we're not going to sit here and pretend to be experts on just exactly what's in the bill, but there is wording in the bill that says the materials that are presented for women, among other things, must be objective, non-judgmental, and designed to convey only accurate scientific information. The Minnesota Health Department, as I understand it, would be charged with preparing that material. Next caller is from a car phone. Bob, go ahead.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Yes, Bob.
See, this thing irritates me so badly, I hope I can talk intelligently and coherently. Please feel free to cut me off if I start to babble.
Okay.
It so irritates me that our congressmen are wasting so much money on something that they, because most of them are men, have no business in dealing with. First of all, I am a registered Republican, and that statement embarrasses the socks off of me now. The other thing that gets to me is these people, well, I am not pro-choice. I'm not the other way. I am totally against abortion. But I am 100% for the women, and only the women, having the right to make the decision on who has an abortion and when. I feel very strongly about that. But
okay.
Thank God Jesse is going to veto it, because he seems to be the only one that ain't common sense. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Bob. Next caller is also from Minneapolis. Dan, that's you. Go ahead, please.
Thanks, Gary, for taking my call. Somewhat similar to what Bob said about a women's right to know that it seems like it's a bunch of men imposing things on women. I think we need to have an equivalent of a man's right to know. And what that should be done is that it should be something done before a man decides to have sexual intercourse with a woman. There should be a 24-hour waiting period where a man should have to read some materials about what the consequences of this sexual intercourse would be, whether they would possibly get the woman pregnant and would be responsible for a child, and something along that lines. I think we're sitting here talking about trying to put all these things on women and all these pressures on, putting it all the onus on the woman, that it's her thing and that it's all up to her and that we have to control what she does. Why don't we start controlling what a man does? It makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Well, besides setting aside the facetious comment...
Well, no, it's ridiculous. That's what I'm saying, is that the whole idea of a woman's right to know is also ridiculous.
Well,
they're both ridiculous, and they're both in the same category, and that's pretty much what I had to say, is that it's up to the woman, let her decide it.
Right. Representative Alice Segrin said in House debate, Dan's gone. Okay. Let's go on to Shannon here. Shannon, your comment, please.
I'm in favor of the bill passing, because I think that abortion is a serious medical procedure and should have the same amount of time for a woman to think about it and read information as any other medical procedure. And I don't understand the big hoopla about this. I just think it'd be very helpful for women to have that information, just as any other procedure they would have, and go home and read it and think about it and then decide.
People say that information is already available.
I think it's available, but it's not always, it may not always be given, and a woman may not always have the time to just go home and think about it. They may go in and get some information and not have time to read it and have a procedure done, where I don't think there's any other medical procedure that would be done that way.
Shannon, do you think you feel so strongly about this that you would be willing to see services, you know, for nursing homes and welfare and so on and so forth. The loss of those services come July 1, a government shutdown. Do you think this is an issue big enough to go that far with?
Well, that's a difficult question. I think with all of those issues are pro-life issues also. There's many areas that are pro-life, and I just don't know what to think about that.
Okay. Thanks for your call.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go on to Greg, who's on the line from Minneapolis. Greg, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I agree with the first caller you had. I think it's dirty politics. I think the issue with the abortion thing should be put on a ballot for a vote. It's already legal to have an abortion. I think because of the fact the money is a given, it's got to be there. They should be two separate items. That's about all I have to say.
Okay. Thanks, Greg. Let's go on to Mary, who's on the line, joins us from Staples. Mary, your comment?
Well, good morning. I guess I have to agree with the majority of your other callers. Is I am really offended by the legislature to have them think that I am not intelligent enough to do my own research ahead of time, that any woman would be that flighty. This is a serious medical procedure, and we do take it seriously, and it's not something that we just rush into and need somebody condescendingly telling us that we have to have prior information. We've already done that kind of work, and I'm really offended by that.
There was testimony at the legislature from women who said they didn't get the information.
I don't think it's the majority of women, and any time that anybody goes in for a medical procedure, how often do they get all of the itty-bitty facts? My husband just went in and had a procedure done. They didn't give him anything. They didn't even tell him what they were going to do, how it was going to work. They said something about, well, we'll use some mesh. What does that mean? You know, that was a serious medical procedure.
Okay.
So that's, I'm real irritated about using it as a political tool. And I do hope that Jesse vetoes it. I work in a nursing home. I'm in the healthcare business. I've worked hard this session to get monies for care for older people. And if I were the governor, I'd have to veto it on the principle that they're using one very controversial emotional issue to tie up and put a lot of other people at risk.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. We are unfortunately out of time. Don't have time to take more of your opinions on the air here, but we'd like to thank all of you who called in or tried to call in. And again, if you're near a computer, the discussion continues on our website, minnesotapublicradio.org. Just click on to the news, minnesotapublicradio.org, click on news and enter your thoughts on our soapbox. And of course, we'll have full coverage of the governor's press conference on this issue. His press conference is scheduled at 1 o'clock this afternoon. We'll have reports on All Things Considered later this afternoon. Coming up right after the Writer's Almanac, a new documentary about America's drug war.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 15th of May, 2001. It's the birthday of the playwright and novelist Paul Zindel, born on Staten Island in New York in 1936. Best known for his play of 1971, The Effect of Gamma Rays on Man in the Moon, Marigolds. Also the author of a novel for young adults, The Pig Man, in 1968, and My Darling, My Hamburger. It's the birthday of the painter Jasper Johns, born in Augusta, Georgia, in 1930. Moved to New York, went to college, worked in a bookstore, met Robert Rauschenberg, and together they did display work for Tiffany's and for Bonwit Teller. In 1954, he started painting his series of American flags, and then moved on to painting targets and numbers and letters of the alphabet and maps. Was hailed as the father of pop art and minimalism. It's the birthday of twin playwright brothers Peter Schaeffer and Anthony Schaeffer, born in Liverpool, 1926. Peter Schaeffer, best known for his plays Amadeus and Equus and five-finger exercise, and Anthony Schaefer for his satire of the crime novel, the play Sleuth. It's the birthday of Tenzing Norgay, born in Nepal in the village of Solokumbu in 1914. It was he, along with Sir Edmund Hillary of New Zealand, who set foot on the summit of Mount Everest on May the 29th, 1953. It was on this day in 1886 Emily Dickinson died in the home she was born in Amherst, Massachusetts. She was 55 years old. She had suffered from nephritis, inflammation of the kidney. Her poems, more than 1,700 of them, were not published during her lifetime, but soon after her death, her sister Lavinia worked to have them published, and in 1890, poems by Emily Dickinson appeared. A few more appeared in 1891, then in 1896, though it would take until 1945 for all of her poems to find their way into print. And it's the birthday of L. Frank Baum, Lyman Frank Baum, born in Chittenango, New York, near Syracuse, in 1856. He raised chickens in upstate New York, moved to Chicago, became a newspaper reporter, and started to write down some stories. He had a fairly successful book called Mother Goose in Prose in 1897, but his big success came in 1900, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. He wrote 14 books in the Oz series, as well as a number of adult novels, which he wrote under many pen names, such as Laura Bancroft, Floyd Akins, Edith Van Dyne, Schuyler Stanton, and John Estes Cook. Here are two little poems by Emily Dickinson. Much madness is divinest sense to a discerning eye, much sense the starkest madness. 'Tis the majority in this as all prevails. Assent and you are sane, demure, you're straightway dangerous and handled with a chain. A little madness in the spring is wholesome even for the king, but God be with the clown who ponders this tremendous scene, this whole experiment of green, as if it were his own. Two poems by Emily Dickinson, Much Madness is Divinest Sense, and A Little Madness in the Spring. That's the Writer's Almanac, brought to you by the people at 21NorthMain.com, where book lovers find 13 million gently read classics, bestsellers, and rare masterpieces on the web at 21NorthMain.com. Technical direction by Mitch Hanley. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Regional broadcasts of the Writer's Almanac are supported by Marquette Banks, your community bank, offering a broad range of financial services for your business and personal needs.
Right after station identification, a new documentary from American Radio Works on America's drug war.
What kind of impact will the Bush administration's energy policy have on Minnesota? I'm Kathy Werzer. That story and the latest from the legislature tomorrow on Morning Edition from 4 to 9 on Minnesota Public Radio, KNWFM 91.1.
You're listening to Minnesota Public Radio. Partly cloudy sky, 80 degrees at KNWFM 91.1, Minneapolis and St. Paul. Sunny and hot this afternoon, maybe a thunderstorm, could hit the mid-90s. Then tonight, clear and cooler with an overnight low near 60. Partly cloudy tomorrow. It'll also be cooler with a high in the low 80s.